in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young. Welcome to the July 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off here in Washington, where the city's National Football League team is dropping its Redskins nickname after 87 years. The AP's Mike Hempen reports.
The team says it's retiring its nickname and the Indian head logo immediately, bowing to decades of criticism that they offend Native Americans. A new name will be selected, but it's not known how long that will take. The move comes less than 2 weeks after owner Dan Snyder, who once declared he would never change the name, launched a thorough review amid pressure from sponsors. FedEx, Nike, Pepsi, and Bank of America all lined up against the name, which was given to the team in 1933, when it was still based in Boston. Mike Hempen, Washington.
Joseph Goan is the faculty director of Harvard University's Native American program. He applauds the corporate pressure that was put on Washington's NFL team.
I think it's exciting that corporate America is recognizing, hey, new generations aren't going to tolerate the old way of doing things, and more power to them.
Goan comments on the influence of younger Americans and Washington's name change.
Whatever the reasons are, I think it's recognition that there's a younger generation who thinks very differently about these matters, about the nation, about its history, about the racial tensions and racial relations that have long characterized the struggle that is America.
Now let's go to Orlando, Florida, where National Basketball Association teams are practicing ahead of the resumption of their season at the end of July. With social issues on the minds of many players, the NBA approved several short messages that players could choose to put on the back of their jersey instead of their last name. The messages include equality, Black Lives Matter, and I Can't Breathe, the words spoken by the late George Floyd when a white Minneapolis police officer knelt on his neck for nearly 9 minutes. Floyd's death on May 25th sparked demonstrations around the world. In his first interview since arriving in Orlando, Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James said he did not choose a social justice message for the back of his jersey.
I actually didn't go with a name on the back of my jersey. It's no disrespect to the list that was handed out to all the players. I commend anyone that decides to put something on the back of their jersey. It's just something that didn't really, seriously resonate with my mission, with my goal. I would have loved to have a say-so on what would have went on the back of my jersey. I had a couple of things in mind, but I wasn't a part of that process, which is okay. I'm absolutely okay with that. So what I will continue to do, off the floor and when I'm talking to you guys and when I'm, everything that I do has a purpose, it has a meaning. So I don't need to have something on the back of my jersey for people to understand my mission or know what I'm about and what I'm here to do. So, but I commend everybody and I respect everybody that decided to put something on the back of their jersey. I think that's great. And also respect anyone that didn't.
LeBron says he appreciates the opportunity to bring attention to big issues affecting Black Americans.
I'm happy to have a platform where not only people will gain joy from the way I play the game, from the way our team play the game, but for also what I'm able to do off the floor as well. So, being able to use my platform, use the NBA's platform to continue to talk about what's going on, because I would not stop until I see a real change for us as Black America, for African Americans, for people of color. And also believe I can do both, though. I can bring happiness to a lot of homes with the way I play the game and the way the Lakers is going to play the game. And I will continue to push the envelope and continue to keep my foot on the gas on creating real change for us as people of color in America.
That's Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James, and he was speaking in Orlando, Florida. Meanwhile, LeBron's teammate, veteran point guard Rajon Rondo, broke his right thumb in practice and is expected to be sidelined 6 to 8 weeks. Rondo is a four-time NBA All-Star who won a title in 2008 with the Boston Celtics. The Lakers already are without starting guard Avery Bradley, who decided not to play in the league's restart. Elsewhere around the NBA, nine-time All-Star Russell Westbrook of the Houston Rockets says he's tested positive for COVID-19 and is in quarantine. The 2017 League Most Valuable Player says he will only rejoin the Rockets when he is cleared to play. Westbrook is one of 19 players who reportedly have tested positive this month, delaying their availability for the NBA's restart. Games are scheduled to begin July 30th at the Disney ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex. The players are training in a protective quarantine bubble in Orlando.
Hi, everyone. It's Taco Fall. I just wanted to say that now's the time to practice kindness and empathy towards everyone around you. We're all doing our best to get through this together, so make sure you do your part. Grab a book, read it to your nieces and nephews and video chat, make a donation of canned goods to your local food bank, or even add some items to your shopping cart for your elderly neighbors. But most importantly, don't forget to just pick up the phone and call somebody and check in. That may mean a lot. You never know. We all can be next to each other right now, but we still can show how much we care about one another. So visit NBAtogether.com and join us in inspiring acts of caring.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Nigeria Rugby Football Federation says it's partnering with Rugby Outreach UK to provide fitness, training, and coaching advice to local teams in the country. To find out more, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted the Federation's president, Kelechukwu Mbagwu.
I think it's a fantastic initiative offering free professional training programs. This has enabled us much better. The coaching sessions are getting better, the training is getting better, and our players are certainly getting fitter. This has been extremely useful, especially during this pandemic when I'm sure quite a lot of people went out of shape. You know, the improvements and the training programs have actually helped. They've helped greatly.
Has the Nigerian Rugby Football Federation benefited from similar organizations in the past?
I don't think anybody has replicated this in the past. At least I don't think the Nigerian Rugby Football Federation has benefited from similar organizations. I would say the CrossFit gym is the closest we have. It's actually been with us for the past 6 or 7 years, training our international players, getting them ready for international tournaments free of charge, and also sending a physio across with us when we have international engagements. CrossFit has worked very closely with the NRFF, and we thank them greatly. You know, may God bless them for their efforts at improving Nigerian rugby.
What has the Federation done to make rugby popular in Nigeria?
If we are to talk about what the NRFF has done to popularize the game, we had a double strategy here. First and foremost, build a solid foundation, you know, have a structure with seasoned administrators handling the admin part of the job. And, you know, we succeeded quite well at the beginning with proper verification done and the numbers of rugby players as well as schools and other participants increasing greatly across the country. We've had our ups and downs, of course, but we've concentrated mainly on the grassroots grassroots development, getting to rugby, as well as the iTribe program. We've also concentrated on getting the women into rugby, back into rugby. They've been in rugby before, and we have excellent talent across the country among our women folk. That, of course, will include the school's rugby, different programs in different states, Kano, Kwara, Lagos, definitely Abia, and Port Harcourt is the latest I hear. The school's rugby programs are actually on the increase. We've also thought that one of the most important things is engaging the media, as we can see from your efforts at encouraging us so far. It's been quite a ride, and the media has been there with us. We thank you, and we thank everyone else for supporting Nigerian rugby thus far. The pandemic has been a challenge. There's absolutely no doubt about it. But I think the game will survive. I think Nigerian rugby will thrive. And we look forward to next season when we can play some more contact rugby across Africa and indeed the world.
That's Kelechukwu Mbagwu, the president of the Nigeria Rugby Football Federation. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings to you. My name is Kelechukwu Mbagwu, the president of the Nigerian Rugby Football Federation. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting the COVID-19. Thank you very much. Good luck.
A message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Africa's Rugby World Cup winning captain, Siya Kolisi, has been doing his part in the fight against COVID-19. VOA's Gwen Uten has more details for us. Hi, Gwen.
Hey there, Sonny. Last November, the South African Springboks claimed their third Rugby World Cup title, and team captain Siya Kolisi became one of the most recognized sports figures on the African continent. And his fight to the top of the sport has motivated him to fight another battle back home. In the midst of a strictly enforced lockdown in South Africa, Kolisi returned to his township of Zwide to help sound the alarm of a potential crisis emerging in the country. In a recent interview with Reuters News, he explained how his Kolisi Foundation is helping those in need.
We're feeding over 1,000 people. No, 1,200. So we're doing 500 in my township. All the streets that I used to walk and all the people that I used to go and ask for bread, now I'm going to go and try and help out for the next couple of months. And then we're going to Rachel's hometown, my wife, and we're going to go and help out there as well. And then there's a couple of school kids that we're helping from my old school. I think 85 families from them. And then there is also a crèche, like a couple of crèches or people from the crèche that we're helping as well.
Kolisi says initially he used his foundation to provide sanitizers and face masks to help medical workers on the front lines fight against the outbreak.
We were able to get over 5,000 liters of sanitizer, and so we distributed amongst three hospitals. And they were all public hospitals who really needed the help at the time, and over 4,000 reusable masks for the doctors as well.
But as the crisis grew, so did the needs of the people. Kolisi said he watched as thousands of people walked for miles to receive food aid and knew it was time to expand his efforts.
A lot of people are going hungry, and there's always been hungry people before the pandemic. But now the problem is people don't have jobs, they don't have work, they've all been cut off work. So they can't even get that little bit they used to get each and every single day. So now we're trying to help out in those areas, especially in the townships. It's really hard because people don't have a lot of land to farm. where in the rural areas people might have land, but they actually don't have water. Those are the new challenges that we see each and every single day. And I thought I kind of knew what struggle was until I went to Limpopo this past week and seeing people without water, using water from the side of the road, some of the water the animals are drinking from, and you see a little kid bathing in that water. And yeah, it's really painful to see stuff like that. And it's actually given me more drive to keep on going.
The Khaleesi Foundation is considered essential work and enables the rugby star to travel during the lockdown. And he plans to continue to divide his time between his foundation and the sport he loves.
I know that, you know, there's so many people who need this. And without, if I stop now, like, and I know, like, everybody's telling me, you must pace yourself, it's so long. I know that, but I think I'll be all right because people are hungry right now. So I'd make sure that I'm training during the week and then in the weekends I travel to these places.
Khaleesi has also banded together with a number of global sports figures as part of an organization that advocates for global preparedness in the face of pandemic threats. Khaleesi said the Pandemic Action Network aims to bring an end to COVID-19 and shines a spotlight on the importance of unity during the crisis.
People from different walks of life to come together, you know, athletes from different walks of life and just playing different sports as well. I think that's also amazing. That's exciting for me, you know, and we can learn a lot from each other. I think the most important thing is it's uniting all, fighting for the same thing, because we're all being challenged by the same problem right now, and using our different platforms to try and help as many people as we can, because this is a humanity fight. Doesn't matter where you're from, we're all facing the same problem today. The one thing that I've taken out of this is the unity that we're speaking about as South Africans. You see, brands would normally compete and now are working together. Now I'll go meet different brands and I'll tell them, working with the opposition, they're like, it doesn't matter. All we want to do is make sure people are fed. And that's the most important thing. That's what I'm loving in this period.
Khaleesi and his wife hope to extend the work of their foundation to other townships in South Africa. Meanwhile, the country has begun to gradually loosen its lockdown restrictions to allow some industries to reopen and some fresh air for its citizens. And that is all from me, Sunny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And let's give a sunny side a sports salute to Siya Khaleesi, South Africa's Rugby World Cup winning captain, for his humanitarian efforts during the coronavirus pandemic.
Yo, 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 sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigress Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, the host of our Music Time in Africa show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to African athletics, it was 22 years ago today that Moroccan star Hicham El Guerrouj set his first big world record in Rome. On July 14th, 1998, El Guerrouj clocked 3 minutes and 26 seconds in the 1500 meters. That record still stands today. A year later, in July of 1999, running in the same Stadio Olimpico in Rome, El Guerrouj set another world record in the mile with a time of 3 minutes and 43.13 seconds. That record also still stands today. But El Guerrouj wasn't done. Exactly 2 months later, in September of 1999, he set another world record for 2,000 meters in Berlin, Germany. His time was 4 minutes and 44.79 seconds. Joining us once again on the show is the energetic Andy Edwards. Hello again from Washington, Andy.
Hello again from London, Sonny. It is indeed an auspicious day in the history of middle distance running. And when I think of Hisham El Guerrouj, it takes me back to a trail of record-breaking runs in the 1500 meters and the mile, and plenty of championship medals as well, many of which I saw at first hand. That world record at 1500, which the great Moroccan set in Rome's Olympic Stadium 20 years ago this day, also marked a time when it was North Africans, not the runners from the east of the continent, as is so often now the case, who ruled the roost in the men's middle distances. When El Guerrouj broke the world record with 3 minutes, 26 seconds exactly for 1500, he deposed the Algerian, Nureddin Morsali, then the Olympic champion. He'd won the title in Atlanta in 96. Before him, the world record for the 1500 was held by El Guerrouj's compatriot, the mercurial Said Ouita. He dominated over a range of middle and long distance events as much as LG. Ouita broke the world record for 1500 in Berlin in 1985. 3 years later, he won an Olympic bronze at 800 in Seoul, and he'd won the Olympic 5,000 metres in Los Angeles in 1984. What made El Guerrouj special? Well, a huge amount of basic talent found in any great performer, but also the application to go with it. He moved like a greyhound, body under control and apparently capable, at his best, of countering any rival's tactics. This led to some epic races, and he won most of them. But on his Olympic debut in Atlanta in 1996, he fell with a lap to go when considered the main threat to Nureddin Morsali, who went on to win the gold. That disappointment spurred him to set records at 1500 in Rome, 22 years ago, and then returned to the Olympic Stadium a year later and break the world record for the mile. On what was then the Grand Prix circuit, he appeared invincible. There were mutterings, however, that he seemed happiest going for fast times, ably supported by a fellow Moroccan pacemaker, rather than championships, which consisted usually of racing pure, each man for himself. He arrived in Sydney for the Olympic Games of 2000 as the favourite, but was surprised by the Kenyan Noah Nyen. There was later a suggestion that he had overtrained in preparation for Sydney, so keen was his desire to make amends for his disappointment in Atlanta 4 years previously. A year before the Olympics in Athens in 2004, he was beaten by a dip at the line from Eliud Kipchoge in the World Championship 5,000 metres in Paris, the latter starting out on his own history-making path. I was there to see it and could barely credit Kipchoge's tactical maturity as an 18-year-old and did wonder what the future held for El Guerrouj. Well, we had the answer the following year, as the Moroccan beat Kenya's Bernard Lagat to win the Olympic 1500 and Kenenisa Bekele in the 5000, denying the Ethiopian an Olympic long-distance double in Athens. I have special memories of the first of El Guerrouj's Olympic titles in Athens. I watched the 1500-metre final on TV in the bar of a hotel in Nairobi, returning from a work trip to Darfur in Sudan on assignment for a TV company in London. Hisham El Guerrouj retired in 2006. He still holds the world records at 1500, the mile and 2,000 metres, ample proof of what a thoroughbred he was on the track. For the sunny side of sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy. And this personal note, I first met the energetic Andy Edwards at the 1999 World Athletics Championships in Seville, Spain. And yes, Hisham El Garouche was crowned world champion in the 1500 meters in Seville. It was the second of his four world titles at 1500 meters. And that wraps up the July 14th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.